Hi everyone, welcome back to the ACT A Number But podcast. Today I'm very excited to bring a friend of mine, someone I had the pleasure to talk to for months and months already, but finally I got him on the podcast, RJ Zimmerman, founder of the Untapped Keg podcast, who talks about sobriety and mental health, and he's a lived experience educator and self-discovery after alcohol coach, while he's managing being a dad 24/7 and running his own business and making content and friends and everything that he does. So I'm really happy to have him here because I know that from here we're going to talk about so many topics, RJ. But first of all, thank you for coming.
Welcome to the ACT A Number But podcast. I'm Minty, and here we'll talk about business, freelance, mindset, education, mental health, life, personal growth, and everything to help you overcome your fears, know yourself, and create the life and career of your dreams. Episodes in English and Spanish every week.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. And everything you said is true, and it still sounds like ridiculous to me when I hear it back to myself.
Yeah, and don't forget, also, we're talking, as something I forgot to say, he's also got ADHD. That's why I know him. But and on top of having ADHD, which is it's a big deal.
It definitely has taken some trial and error and some understanding, that is for sure.
Yeah. What is for sure is I know my mom right now is gonna be for some reason my mom loves you. So yeah, you can say hi to my mom.
Hi, Mechie's mom.
Oh my god, I love it. Now, actually, before we start, a question I always like to start the podcast with to just, you know, get into the conversation, and is I always like to go to the root of maybe that's start coming off too strong, because I know we're going to talk about mental health, but I'm really open and I know you're really open too. So I know there's not a problem with that. So the question I would like to ask to understand the root cause of everything and what brought you here to where you're now, you know, from the bad moments to the good ones and the past. So I guess the question is, what would I need to know about you to understand where you are right now and what took you there?
That's a really, really good question. So,
and it's quite loaded, so take your time.
Right. I'll go with the spark notes, but I'll highlight the important parts, right? Where I didn't start drinking alcohol because my dad quit drinking alcohol when I was about 6 or 7 and never used AA, just stopped. And so I knew going into adulthood that I was going to have a difficult relationship with alcohol. And while I was going through high school, I didn't drink because I didn't want to get caught. And if you got caught drinking, you couldn't play sports, at least 1 or 2 games. And it was really important to me for basketball and baseball. So I didn't drink because I didn't want to miss any games. And when I graduated, I started drinking, and the first time that I drank, and now I know that this is.
Wait, we're talking uni? Graduated uni or high school?
Graduated high school. So I was 18.
Okay.
And
also underage in the US, right? Yes. Is that in the entire country?
It is. That is the truth. It is 21 to drink in the United States. I grew up in Wisconsin, which is by far and away the highest consumers of alcohol in the United States. It's not even close.
Is there a reason?
It's because the culture has deified. It hasn't just like put alcohol on a pedestal. I think alcohol's on a pedestal throughout the entire world. Uh-huh. But alcohol's been deified in Wisconsin.
Wow.
Where from a young age, talking about alcohol is normal. Talking about how much people can drink, being impressed by how much people can drink, and it's different, and it's hard to explain to people just how different it is because alcohol is all over the place. But something that is unique to Wisconsin is it's legal. It is okay for a parent to give a child alcohol, for that child to get drunk as long as the parent is there, any age.
So it's legal.
Yep.
only in Wisconsin.
Correct.
Wow, this is where I know if App is going to listen to this, is listening to this podcast, he's going to be like, "Oh, America!" But like, wow, that's wild.
Yeah, and now, I've talked about that with him before too.
I don't want to move away from the topic because I'm going to take you off the story. But as a dad, because you have two children, how do you see that? Like, as a dad, like, what's your take on that as a dad?
It's something that I know my parents worried about, especially as they started to see me drink from 18 to 21 and beyond. But for me, I'm not too worried about it because I know that my approach to talking about drinking and how I'm showing up as a dad is the best way that I can. And also, I have more tools emotionally, coping skill wise, being able to show up as a support for my kids, that if need be, I can have the conversation. I can show up in a way that allows them to be able to make choices that are going to be healthier for them. And that's just going to, sure, they might have a relationship with alcohol that's unhealthy. Mm-hmm. However, I also understand how to approach talking about it and not trying to give them the shame treatment that I think a lot of people give because they think that that's going to work, but it's not. There's so much we're learning about addiction, escapism, you know, trying to get through life, that once you learn about it and you can figure out different ways to navigate it, especially with people that you love, you set yourself up for success in a way that 10 years ago, 5 years ago, we didn't have because we weren't as open-minded about mental health that we are now.
Sure. And not just open-minded, talking openly. Because,
yes.
I mean, for example, I noticed I had ADHD because I saw all of these videos saying, I think I have ADHD because this and that. And it's crazy how those videos and people just being open about their conditions or the things that they struggle with, how it helps people who don't have the resources or maybe they don't know anyone else who can, you know, point them in the right direction. So I think that us doing what we're doing right now and what Lobo is doing, what everyone else is doing, is helping in a way. Even that person who shares the story in, I don't know, on Instagram stories or a tweet or a TikTok, all of that helps because it might reach someone who has the same problem. And then it can prompt them to keep on looking for those people until they can find someone who can actually help them.
Yeah. And for me too, I got diagnosed with ADHD and I was not told what symptoms I could look out for, what is common. It was just, oh yeah, you're easily distracted. Oh yeah, your mind can be overwhelmed. Oh, you...
What age was
you have
this?
Energy, 33.
Oh, so you got a late diagnosis too. Yep. Wow.
And the reason was, so I was a high voltage line tech for 10 years. So I worked with high voltage electricity routinely between 12,000 and 25,000 volts. And I was running a crew that was responsible for building new lines, for maintaining, you know, all of that. And I was under so much stress that I forgot how to do tasks that I learned in the first week on the job.
Oh my God. And that mistake would get you killed.
Yep.
Oh my.
And that's when I knew something was wrong. And I had problems recalling words in conversation. So I could, for a long time, I could only talk at like a third grade level, like honestly. And then I missed some doctor's appointments and I never missed doctor's appointments. They were for my kids. Like they were for my newborn baby and for their mom. Like I don't miss those. That's not me. And that was when, okay, this is interfering with my life in a way that is really scary. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go and see if I can get a diagnosis.
I guess that's when we all get a late diagnosis, when it's interfering with your life and you're like, okay, I have to do something.
Yep. Absolutely. And that was, you know, it was when I got diagnosed, it was, okay, let's start medication. but they didn't tell me about executive dysfunction. They didn't tell me about the, you know, if something's behind a door, you're going to forget it's there, right? The object permanence. They didn't tell me about time blindness. All of these things that would have helped me to run a crew better, be a better partner, have a better understanding of kids, let alone the struggles that we have as people with ADHD with emotional regulation.
Yeah.
And when I found out about that, I was like, that explains my childhood. That explains my adolescence. That explains so much. And even at that point, it explained so much about how I was reacting as an adult. Mm-hmm. And so when you find out the actual,
and also
how it presents, right?
Sorry that I'm interrupting. Right. I'm not medicated right now. Talk about ADHD. That's like my biggest issue when I'm not medicated is I interrupt. But I don't want to forget about this. So do you think that ADHD had a lot to do with your problem with drinking? Because
yes.
I know too many people with ADHD have like drinking issues. In my case, it was like binge eating, for example. I know other people use drugs and other people have other issues. But yeah, what do you think?
Oh, yeah. The first time that I got drunk at 18, it was the first time that my brain shut up. It was like, It wasn't the first drink. It was the third. And after the third, it was like, I stopped caring about other people's judgments. Yeah, I stopped hearing that critic inside my head and like things just went. And this is how I like to describe it. It's like the first time you put on active noise canceling headphones.
Oh my God.
In a crowded space.
Yeah.
That's what it was like.
Yeah.
And that was something that I never experienced before. And I didn't know what it was. I didn't know anything about it. And when I think back to those times, that's what I was really chasing, was shutting my brain up so that I didn't have to hear it. Mm-hmm. And then after that, at my brain shut up, I could let loose and have a good time.
Right.
But it wasn't until I could get my brain to shut up.
Right. And do you think that now that with the right treatment and therapy, you have the ability to shut your brain when you need to, or at least try?
I quiet it down. That's for sure. And
yeah.
It's been a lot of trial and error. It's been a lot of, so my story doesn't involve a ton of therapy. It involves a little bit, but my biggest strides have been taken through embracing my curiosity and learning from other people and trying it on for myself and seeing what works and what doesn't. And so developing that open mind to, I wonder if this would work, developing the understanding of myself, like using ADHD, using my attachment style, using, you know, people who like Gabor Mate, who's talks about trauma in a way that isn't just, you know, a lot of popular vocabulary. He actually talks about it in a way where you can utilize it and understand yourself. And that's what the podcast did for me that I didn't know was going to happen, was it introduced me to so many people who had so many different experiences that were similar. And so when I heard them, I was like, I wonder if that might work for me, what they used, or I wonder if what they experienced is something that I also experienced. So taking bits and pieces and applying it to myself, seeing if it worked and seeing if it didn't, and if it did, how could I continue with that? And that has led me to, you know, where I am now and how I am as a, that's why, you know, I got certified as an alcohol-free life coach. That's why I'm a self-discovery after alcohol coach, because for 6 years after I stopped drinking, alcohol wasn't an issue for me. I didn't have any problems not drinking, but I didn't know who I was. I was still looking at that same void and black hole in the mirror. And I still had that feeling of there's got to be something more. There's got to be something different in life, because this can't be what I'm going to be doing until I'm 65. So right. I'm 70.
So you feel, when you're saying that you were rediscovering yourself after alcohol, you feel you also had a different personality with alcohol? Like it was a different you.
I would say, so with what I know about alcohol now, you know, first thing that alcohol does is shut down the prefrontal cortex, which is your judgment in your brain. Well, as ADHD people, that's already
underdeveloped. Bad combo. Yeah.
So understanding how alcohol works and how it shuts different parts of your brain off so that the other parts that need to be regulated are still going and don't have the systems in place to be checked, I would say that it's not, that was not the real me, but it was definitely a different me, right? So looking at it, and something else with ADHD is masking. Mm-hmm. And I was a chameleon. You know, I was a different RJ at work compared to in a learning environment, compared to as a husband, as a partner, as a dad, with my softball and volleyball teams, with the guys on the internet. When I went home, who I was with my family was different. All of these RJs were different. And it got to a point where there was just too much in between. And I wasn't just an RJ throughout. There were a lot of masks put up, and me doing things that I did because I thought I should want to, and not because I actually wanted to.
Right. And do you feel like there's one RJ right now? I don't know if one is the right way to say it, but, you know, we have many things of our personalities. You know, we're not always the same when we're happy or whatnot, but you feel whether you're staying true to yourself or not, I guess it's the question.
Yep. Yeah, I would say that I'm embracing my authentic self. And there's different aspects that show up in different times, right? Like RJ out in a group setting, you know, I still go out to bars and quote unquote parties and stuff like that. That's a different RJ than the RJ that shows up as a dad. However, the core values, the core decisions are the same.
Yes.
And that's the difference.
Coming back to the bar thing, and because this is something that actually I struggle with, and I'm sure I'm not the only person who struggles with this, especially people with ADHD who are like very yes man type of person, is how do you manage not to drink with peer pressure? I mean, I don't know if that's the case with your friends and the people who love you, but let's say I am taking care of my health and I said I no longer, because I don't have an issue with drinking. I know I can stop and all of that. I had an issue before when I was younger, I'm not gonna lie. But now it's like, it even makes me feel like very sick to my stomach. So I don't do it. But sometimes you see friends and they're like, oh, come on, drink just one glass. And, you know, maybe that just one glass turns into five, or maybe it doesn't turn into five, but you didn't want to do it because, you know, it's bad for your health. So how do you handle that peer pressure? Because as people with ADHD, I know that can be hard.
Yeah.
And really, for young people too. I know it's a big issue for young people.
And it's coming up with a plan beforehand. What am I going to say? I don't want alcohol. Okay. Am I going to give them a reason, or am I just going to say no? What am I going to drink instead? And then if they push to a level, how am I going to leave? How am I going to, am I going to text a friend and say, hey, can you call me if I text you this word, and act like I have to be somewhere, that there's something going on that I need to leave? And having that exit plan really helps you to be able to just, no, I'm not going to. And understand that when people push you to drink, that's not how they see you, right? It's not about you. They're not trying to get you to drink because they want you to get drunk. They want you to drink so they don't have to look at their own drinking.
Exactly.
I want you to drink.
Imagine you're the only sober person in the room at a work party.
Yeah, that's happened before. That has happened for me before. And I just don't stay late. I'm like, I'm not having fun. So when I don't, when I stop having fun, see ya.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And another thing that I know some people say, it's like instead of saying like, I'm not going to drink today, it's like, I don't drink. You know, I know that they do it a lot with people who smoke. I used to smoke a lot. And one of the things that I did to stop smoking was whenever someone would tell you like, do you want? And I'm like, I don't smoke. Like not, I don't want to, or not right now. I don't. I'm not that person. So I don't know if that helps too, or if it helped you as well.
Yeah, that is something that I would tell people. Like I'd go out with the guys after work all the time. They'd be drinking. And I wouldn't. So one thing is I could be the designated driver and people appreciated that. Another thing is that, you know, when they ask me what I want to drink, oh, I don't drink alcohol, so I'll have this or this. And they'll usually be fine with it. But if they say, well, why don't you drink? I don't know. I'm like, hey, I don't drink. It doesn't agree with me. And so that's why I don't. But I don't judge you that you do. You can have as many as you'd like. And that usually gets them to stand down a little bit. And another thing is I would buy rounds for them. If they were buying rounds, it'd be like, hey, my turn. I'll get your guys' drink. Sometimes they'd be like, no, we can't let you do that. Yours is $2.50 and you get free refills, right? But that's fine. I want to get you guys a drink. That's perfectly fine with me. And that tends to relax people too, because now you're accepted that you're going to contribute and not just kind of be around kind of a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And also if they push you, I mean, this is just me thinking out loud. If they push you, then that's a red flag to me. If they push you too much. Like if they're your friends, I mean, if you cannot control it because they're your colleagues or something you didn't choose, okay. But if you choose actively to be that people and they do this very often or they don't appreciate you, to me, that's the red flag. It's like, but I'm talking about that because you're a coach and as a coach and being a self-discovery coach, I imagine that you listen to many people with many different issues and from all walks of life. So what advice would you give people listening right now who are trying to quit something, either alcohol or a bad habit or a drug or I don't know, cigarettes or anything that they know they need to stop doing because it's hurting them?
Yeah, that's a really great question too. And the first thing I would say is get rid of the all or nothing thinking, because it's not about either drinking all of it or I'm drinking none of it. It can be about little steps. It can be about cutting back, whether that is drinking alcohol, whether that is smoking,
eating healthier.
Yeah. If just because, let's say we used to drink 10 beers a week, right? Well, we go through the first week where we want to stop and we're drinking 7. 7 is less than 10. That's progress. The next week we drink 4. Okay. I'm showing myself I can drink less. And then it's, okay, I'm going to drink. We used to drink 5 nights a week. Now I'm drinking 1 night a week and I'm down to 3 beers. Okay. Like that is some insane progress that we're making. That is awesome. Mm-hmm. Now getting over that threshold of stopping, it's going to take some effort to change how you are approaching that. And some of it is questioning if this is really giving you what you're looking for. So when I have that craving that I really want to drink, okay, why do I want to drink? Why do I feel like I need a drink? Am I looking to relax? Am I looking to shut my brain off? Am I looking for it to kind of be the line between the work week and the weekend? When we have an understanding of that, now we can look and see, do I actually get that? Do I actually get what I'm looking for? Am I actually being relaxed? Am I actually turning my brain off? Is it actually happening? And then, is it worth what happens the next day, the afterwards, right? So when you start to break that down and be open and honest about it and be really honest about it, you start to see that you probably are not getting what you want out of the cigarette, out of the alcohol, out of whatever it is. And it's just become a habit. And mm-hmm. at a point where it's just a habit, you can say, well, I want different. So I'm just going to choose something different. Whether that's, you know, let's say that's the signal between your work week and the start of your weekend. Okay, let's change it to a different drink. Let's change it to something to eat. Let's change it to something you do, an activity, and fill in that time or replace what you were doing and creating a new line. Mm-hmm. And you can actively create that. And that doesn't mean that it's going to be your automatic response right away, but it is going to eventually the more you do it.
Right. It's interesting because I'm thinking about what you said about drinking less and less, and that's still progress. And as you know, I'm a personal development copywriter and wellness copywriter. And one of the things that most of my clients say, and I write for them in the copy, is that, and many of them say this, is that not everything is linear. Like, you're not going to have like a perfect journey. Now, and this is me making the question because I'm like super curious about how this applies to quitting alcohol or people who maybe are doing drugs, because it's not the same talking about your progress or your journey to confidence or to eating healthy than, you know, quitting alcohol. So in that case, is it linear? Should it be linear, or is it okay for it to be a little roller coaster, which usually happens a lot when people trying to change their lifestyles?
It is okay that it's not linear. Not everybody is going to just stop and be done. In fact, most people are not. And that's okay. Let's say you get 2 months, you get 60 days, and then you drink one night, but you only had two drinks. Whereas before you would have 10, right? In one night, or seven, right, or six, but you only had two.
Yeah, that's still progress.
It's okay. Now, what we tend to do is we get to that 60 days, we have one, well, I just fucked it all up, so I'm just going to drink all of it. And you go back to how you used to, and you don't stop, and you're like, what's the point?
Yeah.
The truth
is, I know it's not the same at all, but it sounds like dieting. It's not the same at all. I know, but who has had eating disorders, it sounds like that all or nothing mentality. Like, I eat super clean, or I completely fuck it up. You know, it's like, it shouldn't be that like that.
It doesn't have to be, right? And we can give ourselves an understanding that, of course, after only 60 days, and for years I've been doing this habit, I've been doing it this way. After 60 days, should that habit have taken over the one for years? No. So give yourself the compassion and the understanding that you're human, that your automatic reaction is going to take a while. Mm-hmm. And some intentionality and some effort in your thoughts and questioning your beliefs around, where does this come from? Is it really something that I want? Or is it something that I got from somewhere else and thought that I should want it?
Right. Makes a lot of sense. Now, RJ, this is not related to that. It's more related to time balance. But I'm curious because I know you do many things. And being a father, I cannot imagine what it would be like. I mean, for me, my cat is a lot of work. I can't even imagine. I want to know how you find the time, because sometimes I see your videos and you're hiking, I guess. I think you do hiking. Like, how do you find the time to have that me time amongst everything else you do? How do you manage your time?
Sometimes pretty well and sometimes terribly.
Okay.
So I look at my weeks ahead, and I don't look too far ahead, but generally on Friday, I'll take a look at the meetings and stuff that I have, and I'll plan I try to get 3 days a week where at lunch or in the afternoon, I can take some time and go for a walk. Cause I do like to go for a walk in the woods. I do like to go for a walk in nature. And it's important to me to have time to be able to do that. Sometimes I get a full hour. Sometimes I only get 10 or 15 minutes. But taking that time, even if it's just 10 or 15 minutes, mm-hmm. helps to reset me, and it gives me that mind quieting downtime that I need to be able to look at some of the stories that I'm telling myself, some of the stories that I'm making up about the stresses in my life that's making it bigger, and either break it down into small parts that I can start to actually, you know, take care of it, or realize I'm telling myself a story that's not true and pull the truth out of there that is. And okay, I can actually tackle that truth.
It's crazy. I don't know what is it about walking, but for me, it also helps. And I don't know how you manage to, I don't know if it happens to you, but sometimes I get the best ideas when I'm writing, when I'm walking, like literally. Yep. I need to be walking. I need to be in movement. And, you know, I have the standing desk, and I have the machine, the treadmill, but it's not the same as actually being in motion, you know, and you see your sides moving. I don't know, for some reason I don't know if it's connected with the ADHD or whatnot, but to me it helps a lot. But when you say that it helps you clear, you mean like all of the ideas, you get them out there, like you start writing them in your phone, and you're able to take those ideas out of your head, or, you know, have like a brain dump or anything like that while you're walking?
Sometimes I do. Other times, it helps me to pick out the thoughts that are the loudest. And so mm-hmm. when I can pick those out, it makes room for other thoughts to come through that could have the creativity, that could have the different understandings and different perspectives of looking at things. I think that is a lot that has to do with why walking so effective is because we're seeing different things and we're in a different area. It's making different parts of our brain start to work. And so that allows those quieter, different perspectives that we might not see to come in. And this works if you, let's say you're working in your house and you've been sitting in front of the computer for a few hours, and now you're starting to get easily distracted. Now things, you just can't get through this block, this writer's block. If you change rooms and you try the same question, you might get a different answer. You might see the way through. And you only have to change your room for a couple minutes and start thinking about it. And it's because it's new and your brain's noticing different things, it's starting to light up different areas that'll start to work. And that is kind of how it works, I guess, at a simplified fundamental level in your brain, especially with like the walking or changing your environment or, you know, things like that.
Mm. Yeah. And it's crazy also when you talk about the environment, how a tiny change can really make a whole difference. Like if you have a place set up to work, you know, a space set up for when you sleep, a space to quiet down, and sometimes even like trying to immerse yourself. I mean, this is going to sound super funny, but I do listen a lot of ASMRs, but not the ones that I like, you know, not that, like rain and, I don't know, thunders and wind and rivers and whatnot. That really helps me because it's like, okay, I cannot go to nature right now because I'm in the middle of the city. Well, at least I can have it through some of the senses. So maybe it helps. And it actually does help me a lot to focus because it's, you know, it's hard when you have ADHD.
It is. And that's part of why the bilateral stimulation works so well for us, is because it makes our brain.
EDMR, you mean?
Yeah.
The therapy?
Where it's, well, but the music that plays in different, if you have decent headphones that'll It'll play it in different areas that you're like, whoa, where is that? And it slows your brain down enough because you're trying to focus where it is. I think that's somewhat similar to like the raindrops and the nature sounds and stuff like that, because when you hear it, it's all around you. It is that 3D effect, but not every sound is the same.
I never thought of it, but it makes a lot of sense. Yeah, it's that. And you know what my favorite one is? Rain over leaves, and they sound exactly like one's there, the other one's there, the other one's right behind you.
Yeah.
Now I understand why. That's crazy. Wow, it's wild. Now, RJ, I would like to know, for people who are listening and would like to start coaching, what are your tips for beginners? Because I know there's like many people who have their own issues and they overcome it in their own way, and they now want to help other people, want to become a mentor, a coach. Like, what are your tips on starting?
I think the first thing is to figure out what it is that you provide to people to get them through what their struggles are, right? What are the challenges that you can help others kind of get through? And then once you get that, kind of writing down the framework that you would use to get through issues. Like, one thing that I did at the start that was, if it made it really difficult to understand kind of how I help people, even though I did help people, I was relying more on my ADHD nature of shooting from the hip of, you know, I will use my lived experience. I'll use the things that I learned. I'll use, really smart people's language and their frameworks of kind of going through things. But because I didn't write down or have the steps that I kind of used, it was hard when it came time to be able to talk to people like, I can help you with this transformation. I can help you get from here to here. It was like, I could help you. With what? I'll help you. Okay, right. But what are you going to help me with?
You were lacking the clarity.
Where you are right now, I can help you. And that's where the self-discovery after alcohol came from, was people would come and they'd talk to me and they'd ask me questions. And it wasn't about, how do I get sober? How do I stop drinking? How, you know, what was it? It was, okay, I stopped drinking, but now I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
I stopped drinking and I'm struggling with my emotions. I'm struggling to understand my emotions, understand what is going on inside. I stopped drinking and now I'm bored because I don't go do anything. I don't know what to do. I don't know what I can do. Mm-hmm. And that just helped me to realize that they're asking me this question because they see what I'm doing and they want to get to that point. And after that, it was, okay, I can still help people stop drinking. I can still help them change their habits. But what sets me apart and what's different about me is figuring out who you are after you stop drinking alcohol, after you stop smoking weed, after you stop doing what it was that you escaped. And now you want to be living the life that you want instead of the life you were told you should want, right? And that's...
I'm curious right now for myself. Yeah. But actually, no. Do you also coach for people who had like a, let's call it an epiphany, or like aha moment, or like, oh wait, you know, when you have that point, or when you take for the first time your ADHD pills and all of a sudden your brain starts making all the connections you didn't have before and you're like, oh, now I get this. I actually didn't choose this actively myself. So for that people, do you also coach? Oh, that's cool.
So
I might message you later, but okay. Because I'm only asking because I feel like, I was listening to you when you were talking about people giving up alcohol, I was thinking, how many people may be struggling with relationships? Because, you know, maybe you form relationships around the drinking or around the drug or around the toxic behavior or anything like that, you know? And all of a sudden you're like, oh, all my friends are like where I don't want to be. So I imagine you must have many clients of you. Maybe it happened to you too, like having connections that you not like you want to cut, but you may want to change your, just as you change your environment, you also want to change the people around you. You want to have people that, you know, cheer you on or that lift you up.
Absolutely. You. And that's something
how
that
do you manage that at this age? Sorry.
No, it's okay. It's almost an inevitability when you stop drinking or you stop using a drug or just change a behavior that the friends that you had, you're not going to have the same connection with, because mm-hmm. the connection that you had was what you were using that you don't want to use anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I've gone through that a lot. And so I, you know, the course, I created a 12-week self-discovery course, and it's titled Self-Discovery After Alcohol. But it's, I've had three people go through it who had no issues with alcohol, had no issues with weed. And it really improved their relationships with their partner, their relationships with themselves. And so what it is about is developing that awareness that I am not living the life or doing things that I want to do. And I want to change that. I'm not putting myself in places that I leave and my first thought is, I'm glad that I went there.
Mm-hmm.
I leave and the first thought I have is, that was a waste of time.
Daddy.
That, why did I do that? Daddy. And so as you start to understand and you lean into your authentic self and you realize the values that you want and the feeling that you want through life, you can really start to make those changes without worrying, how am I going to find new friends? How am I going to create a new community? How am I going to, because when you understand that your needs, your wants weren't being met in those old places, you're willing to try new ones.
Yeah.
And so it might take 3, 4, 5 different tries of finding where the new place you want to be so that you can make those friends, but you will find it. And so it's just about putting yourself in situations and environments that you want to be in.
No, that sounds super interesting, because I didn't know that you also coached in that sense. And it's super interesting because I feel like we all, and self-discovery is a constant journey. It's never ending.
Yes. Cause
you're never the same person you were, and you're not supposed to. Like if I looked, I don't know, 5 years, even 3 years before, I don't want to be that person, you know? And I'm sure that, and I hope that in the next 3 years, I look back and I'm like, I'm no longer that person, you know, but in a good sense. So it's a very cool topic because it's a never-ending journey.
Yeah. And I think that a lot of us, when we're kids, we think we're going to get to a point where, okay, this is it. I just get to live life from here on out.
Mm-hmm.
And what we lose sight of is that, yeah, we do get to live life from here on out, but it's going to change and we're going to change. And that's okay. We don't have to be the same person we were in high school.
Yeah.
We don't have to be the same person we were in college, university. We don't have to be the same person we were yesterday.
Yeah.
We can choose who we want to be from this moment going forward. And you want to be someone who is able to and wants to make different decisions and change and be open to trying new things. Because who knows if you've even tried your favorite food?
Yeah, completely. That's true. And it's interesting because I'm thinking, as you were saying, that it's, you know, sometimes when you change, people are like, oh, you changed, you know? And like, yeah, I changed and I'm glad I did. And for talking about the relationships and all of that, what are your like 2 cents on when people are like, oh, you changed, and like, but you actually were meaning to change?
It's when people say that, oftentimes it's because they liked the person that you were before, whether you liked yourself or not. right? You were,
or you might be a reflection also, like, oh, you changed. And yes, I didn't.
Yep. So that's really what that is about. It's not about who you are right now, or like I should say, it's not about it being positive or negative who you are now. It's just about them having to look into maybe themselves. Maybe you just made them see how much they haven't changed, or you made them see something that they've been hiding and something that they're insecure about. So understanding, and when you lean into your authentic self too, I think that the biggest change is when you start to make the choices to live the life that you want to live. And this is what I found as being an entrepreneur too. You stop trying to impress people.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just yourself. And when you stop trying to impress people, their reactions to, oh, you changed, it's not going to have that same impact on you where you worry about, oh yeah, I did. Oh, I, you know, not too much though. It's okay. I still like you. It's, yeah, I did. And that's it. And that doesn't mean that your relationship is over. It doesn't mean that it has to be a bad thing,
mm-hmm.
right? It's just going to be different. Different is okay.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I don't want to take much of your time, but I don't want to close the podcast without asking you this. So I don't know why I always ask this question, but I'm like I read a book once that I can't remember the name now, but it was a really good book. It was about regrets, and it was really interesting because people see regrets as something bad, but he saw them as an opportunity. Like, what do you regret from your life? And they also did a study, like, what people regretted the most, and especially for people who were close to death, like, you know, older people or people who were sick, and they all regretted the things they didn't do. But you, as a coach, what do you think? Do you think regret helps? And if not, what other tools do you think help for self-discovery? Either that's a test, or I don't know how, you know, what are the tools that you say, okay, do this to discover a little more for yourself? Because some people listening to this might want to go into self-discovery, but may not have the means to do that, or have the money to pay for a coach or a therapist. So what are your tips on that? And what do you think about regret?
So if you're looking into starting your self-discovery journey, I actually have a free guide. If you go to untappedkeg.com, that's 5 tips to begin your self-discovery journey.
Oh, cool. And we can leave the link.
Okay, below. Perfect. And it's 5 tips to start your self-discovery journey after alcohol, but you can use it at any time because they're all the same, right? So there's that. And I would say number one is to lean into your curiosity. Okay, you want to start your self-discovery journey. Where do you want it to start at? What is it about yourself that you want to learn? YouTube videos, there's podcasts, there's so many amazing resources out there, books that you can read, go to a library and check out some books. Find something that calls to you so that you will learn something. And the great thing is when you're open to learning is even if it's something that you don't use right then, something that might plant a seed and you can use later on. And then the second thing, and I think that this is one of the most important things to start to look at, and the easiest thing to change that will have the biggest impact in your life, Daddy, is how you talk to yourself, with your self-talk. A lot of us, I would say, especially with ADHD, because we've been going through life a lot of the time, not having the resources or the understanding of ourselves to be able to do what normies or neurotypicals want us to do. So we've been told how much of a challenge we are, how much we can't do something, how much of a burden we can be. And that develops this really intense self-critic. And if you can tap into, and actually make that self-critic a little bit louder, you can start to change the words that you're using, right? So this is where regret is something that can be used. If you're looking at yourself and you're saying, I am stupid, I am worthless, I am clumsy, I am whatever it is with the I am, right? And for me, it was, I am a piece of shit. That's what I said to myself most often in my head. So when you are saying that, that's actually shame. And shame, and you're telling yourself, I am, can't change that. Your brain's going to come up with not just the examples that are going to prove that in your life. So if you can change the word I am to that was, and instead of identifying with an outcome, instead of identifying with an action or a behavior, you're going to start to separate that from yourself. That was not smart. You still use that was stupid. That was a shitty thing to do. And now that you're saying that, now you have something that you can learn and go forward with. And you can actually take that as a regret and, okay, how can I do better going forward? That was really clumsy. I can pay more attention to my surroundings. I can put my phone in my pocket when I'm walking. There's different things that we can do. But if we say, I am so clumsy,
right
now, we're just resigned to that's how we're going to be.
Yeah. I need to stop saying I'm a mess.
I have a mess, right?
Yeah.
And the amount of power that you take back from your past when you do that, it's unbelievable. And the amount that you can change in just a week of being aware of how you're talking to yourself and changing those few little words. Instead of saying, I can't do something, well, I can do it. It's going to be hard. That's okay. This is going to be a challenge. It's not that I can't do it. It's that this is something that I'm not looking forward to. It's okay to not look forward to something. Doesn't mean we can't do it. And once you start to remove that identifier, I am, you can take some of the criticism and the things that you're hard on yourself about, and you can sift through that to find the truth. What is it that I'm really saying here? Well, I'm saying that I'm nervous that I might fail. Okay. Understandable. I'm nervous about that too. I'm nervous about that as a dad, nervous about that as an entrepreneur, nervous about that as a coach, that I'm going to fail somebody. But what does failure really mean? Right? As not showing up. That's failing. Yeah. It's not the fact that you may not show up as your best. It's not the fact that you might show up and can do better. Failure is actually just not showing up at all.
In action, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So and that's that. I would say that is the starting point. That's where you can really start to take these in. And this is where journaling helps.
Right.
I say it like that because I did not want to journal.
I did not want to journal.
And now I journal every day.
Look at this. I have this one. I actually got a nice one because I was like, yeah, wow. This might be a little selfish on my end, but I needed advice because I got the cutest thing of all, but oh no, my writing is too awful. So I'm going to wait until I can write better. So I'm going to do it later. And it's like, I didn't write too many pages. I was like, I'm going to do this for however many days. And for some reason, I don't do it every day. I don't know why. So what are your tips for people like me who even, and they get ready, you know, they get the best. And now it's like, no, now I need a nicer pen. You know, there's always a new excuse to like stop it.
Well, it's
how do I stop
understanding
it?
That you're creating an excuse. But the other thing is, what can you set yourself up for success with? And more than likely, it's scheduling it into your day. Mm. The easiest is the morning,
yeah,
or at night. Just do it. And that's what I do, is in the morning before I start work, I journal. And I sometimes you can use a prompt if that makes it easier for you. For me, it's just writing about whatever's in my mind. It's just taking it and putting it on paper, and it helps.
Mm-hmm. But like, you mean like a brain dump? Because whenever I write down, it's like, call this person, do this work, call this client. It's like, that's not doing anything. That's making a list.
Yeah. So for me, it's writing down the thoughts that are circling in my mind the most, my feelings, my emotions, my, you know, my worries, my anxieties, my fears, the things that I'm proud of myself about, things that I'm looking forward to. That's, I'm trying to write about my life is what I'm trying to write about, and not making a to-do list.
Uh-huh. And does it help if you do it in a lazy way? Let's say you don't want to sit down and write forever, because that's what you do for a living. So when you have some free time, you actually may not want to do it. But maybe, do you think it would help if I wrote down how I felt? Maybe I don't need to write the entire sentence. It doesn't have to sound nice. Maybe I can write angry, hungry, or I don't know, tired, whatever. Does that still help? Yeah. Or do you think it's...
Yeah, okay. Because what's going to happen is when you write that down, now you might have something to say about that anger, where that anger is coming from. Now you might have something to say about, I'm hungry and I've been craving this meal, but I just haven't been getting it or making it, or, you know, admitting to myself that that's what I've wanted. And so when I first started journaling, it was, my divorce was super fresh. And I was having an anxiety / panic attack, and it was the first time I ever had it. I didn't know what to do. I didn't have anybody I could call at that point. I didn't know what was going on. I was just freaking out. So I opened a blank notebook and just grabbed a pen, and whatever was in my brain, just let my hand write it. And it came out as poems. Came out of short stories for a long time. And I still write short stories. I don't really write poems too much because I don't know where those come from. Those just come, they just come out when they're there.
And that's so interesting.
And I never wrote poems as a kid either. I've never had like these poems, but they were poems about my feelings, poems about me at my core. And it just allowed me to get this stuff that I didn't even know was in there out and make way for the stuff that was buried even deeper to be able to come forward to.
How often do you revisit your notes, or how often do you suggest people to do it? Because that's one of the most daunting things, I guess, for people who are starting journaling. Because, for example, I mean, really, I don't understand my handwriting. That's why I was like, oh, yeah, but I need to get the pen because blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. But I actually do not understand it. So I don't know if the exercise still helps, or you actually have to go back and read it.
You don't have to go back and read it.
Okay. And you're not supposed to do it.
Well, you can, but you don't have to. It's whatever works for you.
Okay.
And because I did a lot of poems and short stories and things like that, I'll go back every couple months and I'll read some of them and just remember where I was and use it to look at how far I've come.
Right.
But the ones that I've just written about the anxieties that I've been experiencing for a week or two, or just how the day was the day before, those I don't actually go back and read because there's not really a point to.
Wow. There's a question I want to ask you. You let me know if I cannot ask you and I can edit it out. But not long ago, in a chat, you talked about rediscovering your inner child. Is that something you want to talk about? Okay, yeah, because that really resonated with me, because I've been in search of my inner child. I think I have a lot of work to do with her. But do you think that journaling helped you with that? Was that the journaling, or was that the walking, or was a mixture of everything?
It was definitely a mixture of the things I was learning, of the honesty that I was showing myself, especially when it came to my childhood. And then it did the journaling and the just looking at my understanding of myself, building up the awareness of my past, what I was holding against myself, where my automatic reactions were coming from, and what my experience going through life has been. And noticing patterns between friendships, between, you know, my relationship with my parents, my relationship with my siblings, all of this added up to taking me back to my childhood and seeing where it started. And when I was able to do that, it let me connect with my inner child. And that helped me to be a better, like a more patient dad. And not only was I a more patient dad, but one night I put them to bed and I can't remember if it was a rough night or not, but I had problems sleeping and I rolled over in bed. Sorry, there was an earthquake. So I rolled over and I just said in a voice that I would use to talk to my kids, oh child, it's okay. It's okay. And it was I do remember now, it was a night that I was really angry and I felt self-righteous because I'd been hurt so much of my life. How could these people do that to me? And I had a conversation with myself and I was like, it's okay. I'm here now. I understand why you were protecting. I understand why you're doing what you're doing, but it's okay. And it was pitch black in my room and I didn't know where it came from. And that conversation happened for about 10 minutes and I just had tears coming down my face and I was crying. And I was like, I don't know what that was, but I need to write this down. So I went to my journal and I wrote my experience down. And that moment was the first moment where I really tapped back into my inner child. And after that, it was rediscovering some joy, rediscovering my belly laugh that I hadn't had for so long, and being kind to myself. That just because I wasn't acting how I necessarily wanted to act doesn't mean I couldn't change how I wanted to going forward.
Wow.
And that the past didn't have to define me.
That's really interesting. And I really don't want to take much of your time, but I don't want to leave you without making the question. So before we end, is there anything I didn't ask you that you would have liked me to ask you, or anything you want to close with?
I think the thing that I would like to let people know is no matter what it is you're going through, no matter what your challenges and your struggles are, you're not alone. And even though we like to pretend that it's not, mental health is the through line to everything. It's connected between our physical health, our mental health has to do with that, how much work we're getting done, the impact that we're having, you know, all of this, your mental health matters. So understanding and giving yourself the grace that you're human, and humans have the different mental health depending on what is going on. And that's okay. And if you really start to lean into giving yourself the grace and the compassion that you would give to somebody else, and the understanding that you're human, that's going to allow you to move through life with a different purpose and find your authentic self. And then you can take those shame moments and that self-talk and turn them into regrets that you can change going forward rather than repeating those past behaviors.
That's really interesting. And wait, I cannot leave without saying this, because it all brings us back to something I was thinking when you were saying that, you know, learning to lean into yourself, and, you know, your ability in a way to actually, you know, move away from the pain. And the other day I was thinking about a book that I had to write, and it had a quote that really stuck with me, and it's really interesting that we're having this conversation today, because I reread that book the other day, and I was like, oh my god, this really stuck to me. And it's the phrase "bend without breaking," and I guess that in the end it comes to that, building that resilience, because you're building up from adversity, because nobody goes to a coach. I mean, some people do, but most people, when they turn to a coach or a therapist, it's because they're at their lowest or they're tired of whatever is going on in their lives and they're ready to move on. So I think that that's one of the key of, you know, that self-discovery or getting over with, you know, whatever you're going through.
Yeah. And realizing that even if you spent your entire life running away from the pain, you get tired eventually, and you have to turn around and face it. You don't have to face it alone.
Mm-hmm.
So turn to friends, turn to loved ones that support you, turn to, you know, your partner, your spouse, somebody who can stand next to you while that's happening, because you don't have to do it alone.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, RJ, thank you so much for coming. Where can people find you?
Yeah, you can find me on all social media under Untapped Keg, or if you go to untappedkeg.com, as I said earlier, you can sign up for 5 tips to begin your self-discovery journey. I have a free monthly men's group that usually meets the last Sunday of the month at 7 p.m. Eastern time, and I send that out. You can sign up. It's not about alcohol and getting over alcohol. It's just guys actually talking about their problems and talking about challenges and developing an understanding that we're going through shit and that happens and that we're not alone.
I love that. We're going to leave all the links below. And again, RJ, thank you for coming. It was really amazing having you finally.
Thank you for having me. This was a ton of fun.
Thank you.
If you like this episode, please don't forget to leave us a like, subscribe, and leave us a review. It helps more than you think to bring you more amazing content like this one.